Expo Bomb, and we're here to make you think about death and get sad and stuff.
I'm hearing voices, animal voices, the tremor of cold, the feminine others, and I'm reaching my threshold, staring at the truth till I'm blind.
Gotta turn the new hardware on first before I start playing with crap, because, you know, otherwise it doesn't work. You know, that's how it works. That's how these things are encoded in the base DNA of how things get done. So, hi, how you doing? This is me. I'm the zombie. I want to say hello. I want to say hello in the little ways, and I want to say hello in the big ways. All of the ways that matter, because I have this really neat looking new setup on the broadcast software. So I have this little thingy going there, that little thingy going there, and all the other little thingies going all the way home. And okay. And I have no idea what he just said on there, but we'll keep going because that's what we're doing. So this weekend was an interesting movie watching extravaganza for me, as I have never, ever, 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 ever watched the Hunger Games series of movies, all four of them, 2012, 2013, 2014, 2015. It's almost like they plan to do that one a year. You know, it's kind of, I think there was an interesting idea going there. I'm not sure, but I'm not going to worry about it overly much, because that's not part of the reason why I'm talking about it. And I'm going to turn that down so I don't keep hearing my voice, because that sounds weird. So, I am going to start with the first one. The Hunger Games. Nope, that's not the first one. Is that the first one? Nope. Why are these not in order? Gosh darn it. There it is. That one.
We could do it, you know. Take off, live in the woods.
They'd catch us.
Well, maybe not.
We wouldn't make it 5 miles.
Welcome, welcome. The time has come to select one courageous young man and woman for the honor of representing District 12 in the 74th annual Hunger Games.
It's your first year, Prim. Your name's only been in there once. They're not gonna pick you.
Primrose Everdeen.
Prim! I volunteer! I volunteer as tribute.
Our tributes, Peter Mallark and Katniss Everdeen.
They just want a good show. That's all they want.
There's 24 of us, Gale. Only one comes out.
So you're here to make me look pretty?
I'm here to help you make an impression.
And so it was decreed that each year, the 12 districts of Pan Am shall offer up in tribute one young man and woman between the ages of 12 and 18 to be trained in the art of survival and to be prepared to fight to the death.
This is the time to show them everything. Make sure they remember you.
I just keep wishing that I could think of a way to show them that they don't own me. If I'm gonna die, I wanna still be me.
I just can't afford to think like that.
All right, so that is from the first movie, simply just called The Hunger Games. Now, as I said earlier, I have never watched any of these movies. And I was surprised that I actually enjoyed the first movie. Not it's going to be on my top 10 list at any time. Not I'm going to flat out, by the way, all four movies are available on Netflix and you can watch them there. They're actually worth watching there. Not going to fly out and get it on Blu-ray or anything else. But it was a worthwhile, enjoyable movie. Now, I had a lot of nitpicky things to say about this movie, and I will unload on about them. However, like I said, the basic idea, the premise of the story, I thought was actually fairly cool. And it just happens to be a coincidence that I am watching this movie in the current times with, oh, I don't know, pandemics and 45 running in the U.S. So a lot of that stuff kind of colors my perspective on what was going on in the story. But more so, one of the main reasons why I'd never watched the stories before this, and I have never actually read the books either. So I've heard good things about the books and some other things about them both. The prime concept in behind the story that I understand is that it's a YA adaptation of a dystopian future type story, which right off the bat kind of made me less inclined to watch or get involved with any of the storylines. YA to me is not necessarily indicative of bad. It's generally indicative that it is geared for a younger audience that is perceiving the world around them through glass lenses that might be just a little bit more colorful, in that it is not dark and dreary and also scary, which is generally my cup of tea. I like to go towards that. So the beginning of this movie was like, oh, okay, look, character building, story building. Oh, okay, blah, 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 blah. Kind of boring for me in the beginning. So I'm not really digging it much. So it's like, okay, I'm keeping half an eye over there watching, listening, and in building on the ambience as to whatever is going through in the story. I like the sets. The sets were awesome. I thought the design of District 12 was like, oh, that's kind of cool. But then I got into the movie. And when they actually get into the whole, now the actual Hunger Game begins, my first thought was, oh, shit, that's pretty brutal. Very violent. Not so bloody, but the premise is like extraordinarily, ooh, that's violent. And that was cool, especially because understanding the concept of what they were trying to do is, yeah, that works. So the biggest issue I had with that whole beginning of the actual games play themselves was that it looks like, what was her name? God darn it. I cannot remember people's names because why do I need names, right? Katniss. I just watched the damn movies. Why could I not remember the name? So she gets up out of her pedestal. She's looking at the others, eyeing the bow. It's like, yeah, I'm going to get the bow. Yeah, I'm going to get the bow. And bam, she goes off of that. It's like, it's 74 years. Have you people not watched these things before and watched that the very beginning 5 minutes is a slaughter zone? It's like watching Survivor. And I will compare the crap out of the Hunger Games storyline to Survivor left, right, center, and repeatedly, because the parallels are so close, they completely overlay a lot of the basic storyline as to how it's going. Because it is. Basically, it's Survivor plus. Now, so she has surprised. Oh my God, all these people are killing everybody right at the beginning. This is wrong. Oh, so she still tries. And then she takes a left turn to go. Meh. Okay. After that, I enjoyed a lot. Oh, by the way, spoiler alerts. If you haven't seen the movie, I might say some stuff. So don't listen. So, favorite scene in the first movie is the one where Katniss has been chased up a tree. She's trying to hide from everybody. And it's, oh, what's going to happen? Well, how's she going to get out of this? There's like, they're down there. It's like, dude, just wait them out. They're obviously not very well adapted to survival stuff. And then Rue on another tree over the side, little short girl, kid, really, is there. It's like, point at that, point at that, point at that. And it's like, okay, so it's a wasp hornet's nest. Okay, yeah, that's a really good idea. I think that would actually really go and distract them and scare them all away and whatever. Then in the background, you have the announcer dudes announcing, oh, they're tracker jackers. They're very poisonous. They could kill you or cause you to have blah, 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 blah. So some of the elements that I was not really a big fan of, especially in the first movie, less so in the other three movies that followed, but especially in the first movie, is there's a lot of, hey, we have to explain things to you, and it's very obvious that this is how they do it. So that's how the Tracker Jackers, we learn what they are. Then we learn about, what was the other thing? That was in another one of the movies. But yeah, the idea is they explain everything to you. And it's not a bad way that they've chosen to explain it to you. But for me, it became fairly obvious that there's going to be over the top every single time. Now, being also not so much a fan, but a... yes, and the Mockingjays. And the whole... that was that one, right. So how the Mockingjays work, where they throw their voice and copy and distribute through all of them. And yeah, probably. But, and sorry, that was directed to the chat room, which I'm not going to repeat because, yeah. So, I lost a train of thought there. Oh, well, I'll just have to kick that back into play. So, I liked the idea that you have this whole silly kind of commentary and video going on, front ground, background. You've got the stuff going on with the announcers and everything else. And by the way, can I just say that Stanley Tucci, who played Caesar Flickerman, played an excellent job, and I wanted to punch him in the face every single time he showed up on screen, because that is exactly the kind of person I am not a huge fan of. But the actor did a fantastic job playing that really over-the-top voiceover, discussion, announcer type guy. Really did not like his character, but that is the way it's supposed to be. And yes, his teeth, someone in the chat room just mentioned, his teeth, they were too perfect and too white against his freaking makeup, his hair colors, and his outfits. They were just like, ooh, I want to dump a bag of dirt on you, and it would have been perfect. But that was the thing. His character was perfect in the way that it was designed. And then all of a sudden going through, and it's like, wait a sec, I know that guy. I know who that. Who is that? Who is that? And I just forgot who he was. That really stinks that I can't remember his name off the top of my head, because I really like his music. Shelley Bassett was in this? Interesting. Oh, that is not who I thought that was. Now I'm going to have to change my mind and say I did not know who that was. Oh well. That's the way things work. No, it was Lenny Kravitz. I was right. I just couldn't remember his name for a second because, you know, I'm old. It's what happens in the stuff. You got that information here and then you don't have information there. But Lenny Kravitz was awesome as the character Cinna, the fashion designer. So a part of the whole story structure in the movies being that he comes out with the whole, oh, look, I'm going to make her shine. Do this, do some stuff, and it's fires, and it's cool. And yes, he played that character fantastically, and he was a very believable and very likable character. And then in movie number 3, I think it was, oh my God, what they did. So, not to get ahead of myself, because I sometimes do that, I'm going to go into number 2.
You understand that whatever I do, it comes back to you and Mom. I don't want you to get hurt.
Since the last games, something's different. I can see it.
What can you see?
Hope.
You saved us. I know that. But I can't go on acting for the cameras and then just ignoring each other in real life.
She's not who they think she is. And she has to be eliminated.
I agree, but in the right way, at the right time.
We have to go before they kill us. They will kill us.
People want to fight.
I'm staying here.
They fought very hard in the games, Miss Everdeen. But they were games. Would you like to be in a real war? Imagine thousands of your people dead. Your loved ones gone.
What do I need to do?
This is the 75th year of the Hunger Games. The tributes are to be reaped from the existing pool of victors.
Hannes! I get to say goodbye.
Hannes!
So what do we do?
I think these games are going to be different.
The 75th Hunger Games!
Ready to work?
There she is, Captain 17!
The girl on fire!
I want you guys to forget everything you think you know about the games. Last year was child's play. This year, you're dealing with all experienced killers.
Any last advice?
Stay alive. Remember who the real enemy is.
Okay, so that's the second one, Catching Fire. So basically, the first movie occurred, they had their game, they won. Second movie, they're doing their victory tour. Hey, promote the fact that the Hunger Games are actually a good thing for society, blah, 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 blah. So which brings out to one of my main plot points that was both a good and not so cool thing about the way that the movie was written. It is obvious that the way that the story was structured and designed, I don't know if this is the book that does it as well, but the movie certainly do. Propaganda as a weapon, as a tool of changing society and of keeping it downplayed. So this is one of the things that I really did like about the whole Hunger Games series of movies, is that it's not just fight, 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 fight. It's also about the fact that there are layers of different views and perceptions on how the propaganda thing is used to convey both positive things and negative things in a society. And yes, it's not a new concept, but I thought I really enjoyed the way that it was very obvious that the entire storyline is being adapted around the concept and its execution. The dude face that plays that character on Proctor, whatever the hell his name is. I don't remember what his name. How am I supposed to remember these people's name? Let me just pull up the full cast list and then I can find that out, because, you know, that's how we find things. Do we want to remember? Nah, we don't want to remember anything. Because what's the point? Let's see if I can find his name again. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do. I probably won't find his name. But whatever. He was the Proctor guy, who was the game designer, slash the guy secretly pulling the strings to make the game work after the first guy was fed a bunch of poison berries. And in the second, third, and fourth movie was secretly trying to maneuver the change in society by getting rid of President Snow, who is a complete dick, but played awesomely by Donald Sutherland. You know, typing and talking at the same time sometimes has hilarious introductions of elements. So, Catching Fire, I liked more than I liked the first movie. And then this particular series of movies is going to fall into that category of rare oddities for me anyways, of where the sequels, I think, progressively get better. I think the second one was better than the first one. I think the third one was better than the second one. And I think the fourth one is better than the third one, mostly because of the way that the plots pan out in the way that the stories develop and the characters develop. In this second one of the things that I thought that's really struck home as far as watching it from the perspective of an observer of watching both the movie slash the games, was the way that Katniss's character is becoming part of a revolution, a whole transition to a we want something changed, and she's actually witnessing the effects of the responses to her choices. So when she's at the one district and they're talking about how, I don't remember the name of that district, where Rue was a good friend and she was very sad about them all and whatever. And then the old guy, who's probably her grandfather or just random guy, whatever, does the whole heart to hands up in the thing, salute, and then everybody else in the crowd does it. And then the guards pull him out of the crowd and put him on stadium and tell her to get out, and they put a bullet in his brain for being a dissenter. I was like, shit, that was an awesome piece of spectacle right there, because A, as we the viewer watching it are seeing the direct result net effect of the choice of passive rebellion. She's not actually joined the rebellion yet, she's just basically trying to be a good person and do nice things. They're trying to make something positive out of an effect that she doesn't really necessarily agree with. I mean, she obviously doesn't agree with the Hunger Games because, gosh darn it, it's an extraordinarily effective tool of oppression. But there it is. So that is the one thing I really liked about the second movie, is that you see, she sees, we see, everybody sees the net effect of making these choices on how, when you are a part of a revolution, there are consequences. There are direct and specific consequences as a result of that. So that is one of the main reasons why I like the second one. And there is another thread that figures out frequently throughout all four movies, and Donald Sutherland's character, the president, keeps stating very effectively, very clearly, very emphatically, hope and fear. A little bit of hope is a very effective weapon in keeping people and societies and constructs of things like that in place. You give people a little bit of hope, they say, oh my gosh, I could do that, I could win, I could be these things. And I was like, yeah, okay, so there's a little bit of hope. But if you give people too much hope, then we get exactly what has happened through the whole Hunger Games storyline. There is a revolution, and that was the net effect. I could see that coming from a mile away. I mean, obviously, just because of the way that the movies were marketed. Fear is effective at some points. Hope is effective at some points. And these two trigger elements allowed him for 74 years to keep... Well, no, actually, I don't think he's in there for the whole 74 years. He's probably like, hey, just a wee kid there when it first happens, and then grows into the role. But it is an effective tool for this kind of thing. So I really enjoyed these two elements because they were very visceral in the way that they're explored in the movie. Less on the whole, hey, from the top, let's explain all these things. They're still there, but it's not so much. Now it's more about you actually see. So in the writing world, it's the whole thing, show, don't tell. So you actually see the net effect of what's occurring, whereas you're not actually just telling people, hey, blah, 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 and hey, blah, 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 blah. I like that. So third one, which I have queued up right there.
I never wanted any of this. I never wanted to be in the games. I just wanted to save my sister and keep Peeta alive.
Miss Everdeen, it's the things we love most that destroy us.
Everyone who's watching to lay down their weapons now.
You're alive.
Peeta is the capital's weapon, the same way you're ours.
You will rescue Peeta at the earliest opportunity, or you will find another Mockingjay.
Well, fluff it. Three and four were basically one whole movie just cut in half, so here's number four as well.
I've been watching you, and you watching me. My dear Miss Everdeen, make no mistake, the game is coming to its end.
For the first time in our lifetimes, we're standing together with 13 districts. Our future starts tomorrow at dawn, when we march together into the Capitol. To slow our advance, President Snow is building a minefield of traps. The sadistic inventions of game makers meant to make sport of our deaths.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Welcome to the 76th Hunger Games.
We got one shot.
Let's make it count.
Nothing good is safe while he's alive. Snow has to pay for what he's done.
Our lives were never ours. They belong to Snow, and our deaths do too. But if you kill him, Katniss, if you end all of this, all those deaths, they mean something.
Tonight, turn your weapons to the Capitol. Turn your weapons. To Snow.
That was part one and part two of Hunger Games: Mockingjay. I understand why they split it out into two movies, because, you know, they could make more money doing that. It's an interesting way to do. So overall, like I said, the movies progressively got better because certain elements within each of those movies got stronger and harder and more interesting and darker. And I have always been attracted to darker stories because, oh, wait, guess what? I write horror stories. What a surprise. So the storylines of your main characters are pretty consistent. They keep growing. The other characters, actually, Mark. Bye, Mark. Other characters have, there's so many characters that get introduced and then fade out, introduced, fade out, introduced, fade out, and there's like not much of a storyline going through on them. And that is sad because I would probably want to know more about those characters. Now, obviously, there is a limit to how much they could put into these movies because I'm willing to bet that we're talking about 3 or 4 or 5 books or whatever. And putting them all into a storyline that works like this is going to be difficult. So I'm just looking up names because, you know, I can't remember names. So it's interesting because everything is interesting. But one of the other characters that I really liked in this series was BT, played by Jeffrey Wright, who, as we all know, is in what's that movie that I, show that I really like? What's that show? Oh, yeah. Oh, wait, I forgot the name of that show. Man, why do I do that? I punish myself by not doing these things, you know, having all the information at my fingertips as I talk. But I will get it in a second because it's called Westworld. He was great in that show. Awesome. I loved how he's done that. And all of a sudden, he's in like everything. He was in Warcraft. I ended up watching that a little while ago. I was like, wait a sec. He's in this. And he's, it's just one of these weird, what the hell's the word I want us to use? It's just an odd circumstance. It just happens to come up in a number of things. Over the last 6 months, movies I watch, I find some guy's in it, and then he's in this one, and then he's in that one, and it's like, whoa, whoa. And there's a bunch of Game of Thrones people in this movie as well. And yes, as Evie just pointed out in the chat room, he's also Jim Gordon in The Batman, which I was not going to talk about until after the intermezzo. Ha! There it's there. So, another thing that was really annoying the crap out of me about the entire series of four movies is the population variables. So here we go. We have District 12, which has now been bombed out of existence because, oh, the Capitol got upset that an uprising occurred there. And, oh, she's the face of the revolution. Oh, let's make an example out of her and nuke the whole thing. Well, they didn't nuke it. They just sent in a bunch of peacekeepers and bombed the shit out of everything. It's what it is. So it's like, yeah, that is a very effective tool of the storytell. But here's the problem I have with it. So they very clearly say 10,000 people in District 12 and only 615 or 915 or something like that were able to escape before they took out all of District 12. 10,000 people. So I'm assuming by the looks of things that all the other districts have about 10,000 people as well. So that is 130,000 people, give or take. maybe a little bit more, maybe a little bit less. It's different varieties, but from whatever you could see, from whatever I could see in the movie, and from everything that was indicated from in context within the movie, just like I said, with District 12, where they specifically say 10,000 people. The capital is the city size of, say, oh, I don't know, Toronto or New York City. That has almost 4 to 12 million people in that city. Okay? 12 million people, 10 million people, 4 million people, over a million people in that city. It's huge. It's got all the best things, all the nicest things, all the pretty things, all the shiny things, all of the things. And there's like a million people living there. They seem to have an endless supply of peacekeepers, the guards people. And it's like, where do they keep coming from? Well, they ought to keep coming from the capital. Oh, so there is no way in heck that a million people plus are going to live in a capital city being fed all of the supplies, all of the materials, all of the physical things, food, water, wood, mining, whatever else, from 130,000 people. Just not going to be happening. And it's just one of those physical statistic things that came up with me during watching the four movies. It's like, yeah, I can't get over this one. This is going to be the thing that I'm going to rant about in this movie, because that is the thing that drove me up the wall. And I'm going to leave about that. But it is what it is. Obviously, there's probably more context to things and whatever else. And as a movie maker, you can only show so many things. It would have probably been better for me if they didn't even mention the 10,000 people. They just mentioned that everybody died except for 600 people. That would have been more effective as a piece of information breeding the positive, negative sides of those stories. So, the camera crew, Cressida, Massilia, Pollux, and Castor. I love those guys. Those guys were awesome. The whole idea that the one guy, I can't remember which one was which. One of them, Pollux or Castor. They were the two video cameramen wearing the helmets, doing the stuff, watching, hey, okay, we're catching it all. And the one guy can't speak because as a younger person, 5 years ago or whatever in movie context, they cut out of his tongue because he was a bad person for saying things. Which, as you get into it, that's the whole basic story of the whole movie. Oppression is a bad thing. And here's what happens. Oh, this guy that's running that country, which is basically, we're talking the whole Hunger Games world, is essentially a post-apocalyptic USA. And it's been redivided on here. This is another nitpicky thing that came out to me as well. What happened to the rest of the world? Are they not involved with the world? Is the world all dead? Is everybody else basically said, the Hunger Games people, let's just stay the hell away from all of them and keep them all away out of it all, because we don't want to get involved in their silly ass stuff. Bam. So then we get into District 13 as well. We see this huge warehouse of weapons, missiles, blah, 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 blah. When did they use them? I didn't see them use all of that stuff. It was a lot of hardware to use. And yes, they used a great point at the beginning of the movie, beginning of that section where, oh, well, if we bring out some of it, then they'll know we have stuff and they'll attack us in greater numbers. Yes, exactly. And that's good strategy. So that was cool. But then we get into the whole fighting thing. We've got Katniss and the rest of the team running around through the capital after they have taken the walls, and they're running around. Where's any of that hardware? They've got a few guns. They walk around. They're doing stuff. That's it. We see a couple of half-tracks, APCs running around. That's it. I was urgh. And more importantly, the other thing that really bugged me was these game pod things. So the entire city now has been laid out with these game pods all over the city. We're talking like 16,000 of these pods playing out. And they're all game adaptations. Huge machine guns, big wiry stipe things, flamethrower things. And most importantly, this big vat of sludge that just goes through this whole thing. And it's like, we're talking not a small amount of sludge. We are talking about the size of a small lake just pouring into this part of the city. And it's like, where the hell did it all come from? Where did it all go to when it all drained out? What the? So it's like that whole thing. How much time has passed between the uprising to the eventual trying to get into the city and take over everything, did they have the time to put all these pod things in? Because they're not just, here's a drop a box, here, drop a box, here, drop a box. These things are integrated into the architecture of the city. So even given that maybe there's a time element that has been kind of massaged so that you don't really see it, the characters, the Katniss character and the other characters here, are not really expressing a great deal of time having passed through the journey of getting from the beginning of the uprising into the actual invasion of the city. Doesn't seem to really make sense. So does that mean that all these pods always were in the city, layered in all the time? What kind of world does that create for the citizens of Capitol? What? So that is just kind of a number of the things that really stuck out for me. And I still, even after all that, one more. So now they're all in the tunnels in the sewers, trying to dig their sneaky way into the center of the city. And wait, they unleashed the Munts, or the Mutants, or whatever they call them. What the hell? Why didn't they introduce these earlier? They were cool. They were just messed up cellar dwellers. And blah. So yeah, that was the other another negative thing, is that every once in a while they introduce elements that are just out of the blue. It's like, what? They had killer apes in the one fighting area. They had the whole little island thing came a clock and turned around. Lightning striking. And it's like all these elements are very, very specific, very, very unique, and very interesting and very cool. And they just didn't give them enough time to develop or be actually appreciated more. So it's like the impression I'm left with is they have all this large pool of stuff to throw into the movie, and they picked and choose what they wanted and worked with those, and they didn't give them a lot of time, much like the many of the characters, where you don't really get to see their story or their character. Now, I do have to point out one of my favoriteest, interestingliest, and it's still silly, but it is still, as part of the way you do in a general storyline, you say, the character has to grow. Effie Trinket. She annoyed the shit out of me from the very beginning. It's like, oh my God, look at that really fake person. It's like, oh, it's like, what the, how can that person actually be alive? Like, do they actually have enough brain cells to actually talk from and feed themselves and walk? How is it that they can put all that much costuming on, that much makeup and everything else? She really drove me up the freaking wall with that character. She did a very good job of it. This is why. When you can generate that much of an emotional response to the character's acting, that is awesome. You connect either positively or negatively. Brilliant stuff. But her character development through the series of movies, like piece of fluff to, okay, now she's hard work, she's trying to be friends, and everybody's team building, and it's all cool. And then it's like, oh, geez, man, I'm in prison with all the prisoners, with everybody else. I can't do nothing. I'm like, And then to the, oh, hey, we have achieved success by overthrowing the government and creating a better world for everyone, and I was a part of that, and I am going to miss you dearly when you go on to this little blah 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 blah. So I loved her character development, hated her in the beginning, and it's like, oh, and Woody Harrelson starts as a drunk and becomes a responsible person. Awesome. So it's like a lot of these things I really just enjoyed, little bits and pieces that they didn't really express too much on, but they expressed just enough a little bit so that you can get into it. So like I said, too many things that they're trying to do all at once, and that's just, there will be suffering for that. And so, wow, I didn't really leave myself a lot of time. I really talked way more than I thought I was going to talk about this movie series. Well then, fine. I'm going to skip the intermezzo. No, I'm not. I'm going to put the intermezzo on anyways. Here we go.
Whether long-range weapon or suicide bomb, a wicked mind is a weapon of mass destruction. Whether your Soraway son or BBC One, misinformation is a weapon of mass destruction. You could a Caucasian or a poor Asian. Racism is a weapon of mass destruction. Whether inflation or globalization, fear is a weapon of mass destruction. My dad came into my room holding his hat. I knew he was leaving. He sat on my bed, told me some facts, son. I have a duty calling on me. You and your sister, be brave, my little soldier. I
And don't forget all I told you. You're the mister of the house, now remember this. And when you wake up in the morning, give your mama a kiss. Then I had to say goodbye. In the morning woke mama with a kiss on each eyelid. Even though I'm only a kid, certain things can't be hid. Mama grabbed me, held me like I was made of gold, but left her in the stories untold. I said, mama, it'll be alright when daddy comes home tonight. Whether a long range weapon or suicide bomb, a wicked mind is a weapon of mass destruction. Whether your solar wind sun or BBC One, misinformation is a weapon of mass destruction. You could have Caucasian or a poor Asian. Racism is a weapon of mass destruction. Whether inflation or globalization, fear is a weapon of mass destruction. Whether Halliburton, Enron or anyone, greed is a weapon of mass destruction. We need to find courage, overcome. Inaction is a weapon of mass destruction. Inaction is a weapon of mass destruction. Inaction is a weapon of mass destruction. My story stops here. Let's be clear, this scenario is happening everywhere. And you ain't going to Nirvana or Farvana. You coming right back here to live out your karma with even more drama than previously. Seriously. Just how many centuries have we been waiting for someone else to make us free? And we refuse to see that people overseas suffer just like we. Bad leadership and egos unfettered and free to feed on the people they supposed to lead. I don't need big people to pray and wait for the Lord to make it all straight. There's only now I do it right, cause I don't want your daddy leaving home tonight. Whether long-range weapon or suicide bomb, a wicked mind is a weapon of mass destruction. Whether your solar wind sun or BBC One, misinformation is a weapon of mass destruction. You could a Caucasian or a poor Asian. Racism is a weapon of mass destruction. Whether inflation or globalization, fear is a weapon of mass destruction.
So that was a song called Mass Distraction by a lovely band. I don't know if he's a band or just the singer, called Faithless. Dude sings some awesome stuff. I love his music, and almost every single song has got some kind of social commentary. And I always, as watching the Hunger Games movies, it's like the whole idea of the propaganda as a tool and a weapon, everything. This song was something I've heard a long time ago, and it was like always rung true for me and that sort of thing about how words and concepts and things and elements of news and stuff like that are used as a mass distraction, as a weapon of mass destruction. And that was a cool song. You should check it out. Now I'm going to try another trailer thing, because it's a good thing nobody comes on after my show on this station, because I'm going to go a little over here, but dag nabbit, that's just how it's going to work.
Supposed to be. I'm vengeance.
Whoa! This guy's crazy!
So DC just had their big event on the weekend called DC FanDome, and there they announced a whole bunch of stuff. Surprisingly, very little information about what's going on with the actual comic book line for the stuff that I'm actually interested in trying to know. So that trailer was the trailer for The Batman. I have been really iffy on a lot of the material that has been released over the last 6 months for the movie coming out. I was like, it looks kind of goofy. It looks kind of silly. Kind of looks, This trailer, I like the trailer because it actually looks like they are taking the storyline back to basics, back to a simple, straightforward detective story. And that, I think, is going to be freaking awesome. But again, I'm not really familiar with Pattinson as an actor. I've never really seen him in anything, so I can't really comment. I don't know if he's going to be good or he's going to suck. However, there is a lot of things that are there that I just like the visual elements that they've introduced there. So it's like, by the way, did I see a putty tat? Yes, I did. There is a Catwoman in there. Ho-ho! Ha-ha! Hee-hee! And the Riddler, they didn't obviously play much of him on that. And then the other characters that are possibly in the storyline or whatever, they're not going to really show much. And that's good. I want it to be a big secret, but I want it to be cool as hell. I fear it might not, but we have to see. So this is part of DC's new revision of how they're doing their entire products and everything. They want to move more to digital environments, IP production, as opposed to creating physical products. So we'll have to see how it's going to go. And then I'm hoping positive, but we'll see. Other things that came out of DC FanDome is that the new Wonder Woman 1984 trailer actually shows you Cheetah, played by Kristen Wiig, in the actual Cheetah outfit. And on top of that, they also put into more of the bad guy, which I think is Lex Luthor. I will give you all of your heart's desires. And bam, everybody has, what? And it's just going to be a kind of weird thing, which is an element that has been playing in the comic books recently, where Lex Luthor has his whole power thing where he can give people everything. And it's just, okay, megalomaniac? Yes, I think so. We'll see. Other things that were announced, Batman Gotham Knights game. Not much of a video game player myself, but hey, that's going to be some stuff. So we have Milestone Comics returning, which for many people who are not DC fans is a, and no, I'm not sure it's Lex, but I think it is. Milestone Comics was a subset of DC Comics and they had odd characters. So, and one of those characters is called Static Shock, which is a movie coming out as well. We also have the Snyder Cut of the Justice League movie, which is going to turn into 5 freaking hours. There are going to be 5 episodes showing on the HBO. I'm positive it's going to be awesome, but I'm not 100% certain if it'll be awesome or not. It has the strong potential to be awesome. So we'll have to see. But it also has the strong potential to just still suck, because the movie itself was not something I would really say very much in the way of positive things about. And I've just made a decision for the rest of the show. We are not going to go over because I'm not going to do one thing. Ha ha, ho ho, hee hee, hey hey, ha ha, they're taking me away to the happy home where things are bright and gay, yay! So we're not going there. Another thing that they brought out an announcement for was the Black Adam story, which has got The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, playing the antithesis to Shazam, which is a character that doesn't get much play in the comic books, but obviously is definitely something in the darker side of things. Because Black Adam is basically power with control, but no morality. His character is essentially all of the strong things that Shazam has, strength, power, speed, agility, all of those things, but none of the compassion, hope, caring that Shazam has. It's going to be an interesting thing. I really do like the idea of what they're going to do. The trailer thing that they, the teaser that they put out was more of a, here's some concepts, here's some sketches, here's some dialogue, blah, 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 and some more blah. But it has some interesting ideas. I hope to God, though, they don't go Scorpion King with it. Just for the love of God, please don't do that. But we'll see. Again, a lot of the stuff is, I want to be positive about the possibility that these things are going to be awesome. But the reality is, some of these things might not. It's kind of, eh. You know, you got to wait and still see. And I don't really want to be hating on any of the products or whatever that they're putting out. But, I mean, a lot of their historical elements have been. And I'm hoping that what they've done is they've turned a new leaf the way that the Marvel worlds have done it. In that, once you've put the money into the production and the project, you then let the people who are you're hiring to do, to have faith in their ability to deliver that project and that product and that all of the stuff in there and make a good project. Now, okay, there's two more. There is a Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League game, which looks like it's supposed to be super intense, super mega over the board, over the top in integrating people all over the world to play against each other. And, well, okay, that looks crazy as shit, but all right, I guess there's going to be some stuff there. But the big one for me was Suicide Squad. The first movie blew some really big chunks. This second movie, oh, this looks fun. This looks fun. We now have crap tons of characters in here. Let's go through the list, shall we? So, we have Idris Elba as Bloodsport. Who the hell was Bloodsport? I don't remember Bloodsport. Margot Robbie, again, as Harley Quinn. John Cena as Pacemaker, which I love the expression that he's told in the thing. Okay, so you know Captain America? Yeah. Do a douchier version of Captain America. Okay, I can do that. Awesome. Looking forward to that. Viola Davis again as Amanda Waller. Jai Courtney as Captain Boomerang. Joel Kinnaman as Rick Flagg. David. Yeah, that's going to be a hell of a name for me to try and pronounce. Dast Malchian. This sounds about right. Polka Dot Man. Who the fluff was Polka Dot Man? Seriously? That's almost as bad as Condiment Man in, oh my god. There really is a character, by the way, in the DC Universe called Condiment Man. His superpowers are he has mustard and ketchup with him and he squirts people with him. Seriously? Polka Dot Man. I have to look that one up. I have to. I really do need to know more about that one. Daniela Melchior? Melchior? I'm sorry if I butchered your name there properly, improperly, but that's what I threw at. Ratcatcher, not Ratcatcher 1, but Ratcatcher 2. Steve Agee as King Shark. King Shark is a cool character. I'm going to leave that alone. Sean Gunn as Weasel. Flula Borg. I think I got that name right. Character as Javelin. Nathan Fillion as TDK. Why is it TDK? I don't know why it's TDK, but... Oh, and Evie wanted to comment on the thing that Condiment Man and Calculator Man were one-offs. No, Condiment Man shows up again in several Harley Quinn comics, and it's like, whoo! And you just throw him in from left field every once in a while. Peter Capaldi? Oh, wait, that's one of the doctors! Is the Thinker, which I always thought that was a Marvel character, so I'm going to have to look up on that character as well to find out who the hell the Thinker is in DC. Pete Davidson is Blackguard. Alice Braga, Sol Soria, Mei Ling Ying as Mongal. Oh yeah, I remember that character. Michael Rooker as Savant, Storm Reed as Tyla, Jennifer Holland as Amelia Harcourt, and Juan Diego Botto as Luna. That's a lot of characters that if you're not a DC huge fan, who the hell are they, right? I mean, I have to look up half of these characters, and I'm in, I love comics, so it's like, I don't know these guys. So this is going to be, guess what? Half these guys are going to freaking die in the movie. It's kind of a guaranteed. They did not put Booster Gold in this movie. Just as a comment to the chat room. Half of these people are going to die. It's one way or another. I'm willing to bet one or two of them die, like, right in the first 5 minutes. Somebody. I don't know who, I can't really tell, but every single one of these characters, other than Harley, Amanda, Boomerang, Flag, yeah, that's about it. The rest of them are all disposable characters. They're all non, market characters. They're not, there's just not enough material out there for them to support doing anything more. And unless they're actually planning on doing a full-fledged marketing rollout of products and everything else to go with these guys, they are going to kill half of them, if not all of them, you know? It's just kind of a thing that they've been alluding to left, right, and center. I mean, James Gunn has been alluding to it on his Facebook and Twitter since day one. Don't get too attached to anyone because, you know, he might kill them. You know, it's just, it's funny. It makes me laugh. And I'm hoping that this means that Suicide Squad is going to be serious and fun at the same mix and going to work the way that it should work. And I like James Gunn. I like his work. I like a lot of the movies that he's directed. So I'm hoping, and I have big things hoping for the way that that's going to work. So it's like, yeah, that's some positive things to work with there. I really, really do think there are things. There are things. There are things. There are things. The record stuck. The record stuck. The record stuck. There are things. You know what I mean? So this particular episode 2 was brought to you by The Hunger Games. I hope you enjoyed it. It is about 2 minutes left before the end of the show, and I'm going to ramble, 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 zombies. So we now have some big things coming out of Marvel as well. They have their next huge crossover mega comic extravaganza. We've got The King in Black is coming. Oh, wait. Null is a very, very bad character in the Marvel Universe now. They, I have to do a laughy emoji on that one because that was actually funny. So there is a big buildup. Marvel also has their whole X-Men universe that has been growing over the last year or so with Jonathan Hickman's re-envisioning and reimagining of the entire X-Men universe with Krakoa, the whole Hylians, all of the characters redesigned, redefined, the whole way that that universe thing works. Which is, some of it's really cool, and some of it's kind of like silly. Like the core X-Men and X-Force and a couple of the others, they're really good reads. They're actually very solid stories because, oh wait, Jonathan Hickman's part of that specifically, and some of the spin-off stuff is just other people tacking into the same thing with him having oversight and everything else. The ideas are great, but some of the executions, hit or miss with me. So now the next thing coming out is X-Swords, and it's like, okay, now we're just really reaching. And they're introducing a whole bunch of new characters. Marvel, I think, has been trying to up their game by introducing crap tons of new characters. Broaden the diversity base by bringing in characters from different cultures, different parts of the world, different ethnicities. And I think that's cool. I really do support the idea that they actually bring in characters that represent more of the people that are actually reading the product. And it's like, okay, great. That means I can identify with this character. I am, Swordmaster, which is an Asian character. He's actually pretty cool, but he's very anime-like, but it's anime-like in the Marvel universe. And it's like, it's interesting and it's kind of whatever. But the whole X-Sword series looks, I really don't know. Did they just jump the shark with that? We'll have to wait and see. Still loving Immortal Hulk, but it's getting into some really left-field stuff now, and it's, I'm left wondering, what? But we could see this, and it could be good. So that is pretty much wrapping up the end of the show now. I want you to thank you for coming out again. This has been episode 383. Can you believe it? 383 weeks I have done this show. Wowzers. I'm still going. So check out the Facebook, check out the Instagram, check out the Twitter. I don't post as much as I'd like to on all of those things, but that's going to change in the near future as well. I do have some expectations to release new books. Woo! I wonder who's going to be excited about that more, me or Jack? Ha ha! So we'll see. And yes, I keep saying so I should probably stop doing that. But that is a speech pattern that I am well comfortable with. And if you don't like it, toodles, toopies, tacos. Yes, tacos. Get some tacos. That's good for you. So I want you all to have yourself an after-rotten good time. Be well, be happy, be all the things that you want to be. But more importantly, be on time every week, Wednesday, 9 p.m., tmvcafe.com/radio. Have yourselves an amazing after-rotten good time, an amazing after-rotten good week.